Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
It's the 26th of April, 1987. It's the end of the FAI Cup final, and the Hoops are champions once more. The grand, now aging old lady of Irish football, Dalymount Park, the backdrop for an incredible, history-making team. Rovers had had an incredible run. 4 League of Ireland titles in a row, and now they had 3 FAI Cups in a row. In that, they had a treble-double, winning both the League of Ireland and the FAI Cup in the same season 3 times in a row. And when Pat Byrne lifted the trophy above his head, he might have let his mind wander to perhaps all the trophies that were to come. But with their home ground of Glenmalure Park at Milltown controversially sold off for property development, the trophy winning went with it. They would lurch around Dublin looking for a home for years to come. And great players moved on to other teams. The winning for this great team had ended that day in Dalymount Park. But for 4 incredible seasons, they dominated like no other team had done so before. Perhaps the greatest League of Ireland team of all time, who played their way to the greatest trophy run of all time. A star team that shone white hot and then burned out just as quickly as it arrived. This was the 1980s in the League of Ireland, and one team above all would leave their name on the decade. That team was Shamrock Rovers. Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin, and our amazing football historian, Gary Spain. And on this week's show, as you heard from the intro, we're looking at the League of Ireland in the 1980s, including that great Shamrock Rovers team. It's also the decade where we got Division 1 football and relegation from the Premier Division with the introduction of the new tiered system. We look at Derry joining the League of Ireland and what they brought to the league, plus much more to come. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube and Amazon Music, as well as a host of other platforms too. Share the show on your social media platforms to help others learn about the history and heritage of Irish football. So, let's get down to this week's show. So, Gary and Eyre, our last episode when we talked about the League of Ireland, we talked about the League of Ireland through the 70s, an incredible decade of fantastic teams that just seemed to surround each other and go after those major titles that were on offer. The 80s is a little bit different, but we see some new names on the trophy that we've kind of not heard of for a while in previous kind of seasons as well. Give us a kind of a rundown of the 80s in Irish League of Ireland.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can talk about my favourite topic, which would be the Limerick 1980 title-winning side.
But you haven't mentioned that before.
In fairness, you also have the Athlone Town team, who won 2 titles in 81 and 83. They're only titles. Fantastic Athlone Town side. You had Dundalk, we talked about, they'd won the double in 79, but went on to win the league in 82 as well, and win a double again in 88. You have the Derry City treble winning team in 1989. But you've arguably the greatest League of Ireland side of all time as well. They're definitely in the argument, which is the 4 in a row Shamrock Rovers side. So there's a lot to digest. There's a lot to talk about. And it was a pretty huge decade in the history of the League of Ireland.
Yeah, and the 3 in a row that Shamrock got 3 FAI Cups in a row as well that decade too. So this was, is it fair to say it's the coming of age of the Shamrock Rovers that we kind of know now as the team that are in and abouts of winning major league titles?
Yeah, because I think it's fair to say they'd gone 20 years, I think it was, without a league title, which was an eternity in the history. It is an eternity in the history of Shamrock Rovers. They're talking about the drought at the moment because they didn't win it last year. You know, we're used to seeing Rovers at the top of the league. We're used to seeing Rovers winning leagues and winning FAI Cups. Now, I mean, I think they've only won one FAI Cup since the 1980s, but they have won quite a few leagues. And I think in the modern era, certainly in my lifetime, that was the first time we saw Rovers really at the top of Irish football. Johnny Giles had come back. He certainly brought them from being a team down near the bottom, played fantastic football, won the cup in 78. But Jim McLaughlin's side, they dominated in the mid-1980s. Four leagues in a row, as you said, three FAI Cups. The last three were doubles. So what a team.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Fantastic team and arguably one of the greatest League of Ireland sides of all time. And there is a few of those and a few Shamrock Rovers teams in there for that nomination. But let's go back to the start and let's start where your heart always lies, Gary, and that's Limerick winning the league title in 1980.
Yeah, I mean, it was one that came out of the blue. We talked about Owen Hand. I know there's a separate interview with Owen Hand. Owen arrived in the summer of 1979. I mean, Limerick had been probably mid-tabling, had finished sixth the season before, hadn't really challenged for the title. There were signs there had been some good wins the previous season. They'd got to a cup final in 1977, lost to Dundalk, had won a league cup in 75 under Ewan Fenton. I don't think anybody expected Limerick to challenge for the title. Owen Hand arrived in as player manager, and he made a huge difference. He introduced a level of professionalism. He had the players fitter than they ever had been before. He had Dave Mahidi, who was working out in the Thomond College, as it was at the time. And he was an expert. Dave mightn't have known that much about football, but he was an expert on fitness and physical fitness. And he was doing sports science in 1979 when nobody had heard of sports science. It probably was called something else back in those days. But so the Limerick team were definitely a lot fitter than they'd ever been before. And that showed, particularly early in the season, when they won a lot of games with late, late goals. And, I mean, they were up against a top-class Dundalk side. Dundalk had won the double the previous season. That was the season they went further in Europe than any other Irish side, League of Ireland side, had gone, in that they'd won two rounds. They'd beaten Linfield, they'd beaten Hibs and Malta in the European Cup, and then played Celtic. And they were the width of a post away from knocking Celtic out. They lost 3-2 at Celtic Park. It was 0-0 in Oriel Park. And in the last minute, ball came across the box and Tommy McConville, who rarely crossed the halfway line, well, he was at the edge of the six-yard box and had a fantastic chance to win the tie on away goals. And unfortunately, his effort went just past the post and Celtic escaped into a quarter-final against Real Madrid.
Wow. So talk to us a little bit about this Limerick side in terms of players. Who's in the makeup of this Limerick League winning side?
First of all, you're Kevin Fitzpatrick in goal. I think to win any league, you need to be solid at the back. Kevin was in goal. He played every single one of the 30 league games. And he was actually unusual. I mean, Kevin was 22 years with the club, but he had a pretty stressful, important job. He was a sales rep. He was on the road, I believe, for Gallagher's. And he quite often missed games, but luckily that season, he didn't miss a single game. Very solid at the back, likes of Joe Mahoney, Brendan Storen. Owen Amin was a centre half, but he realised he had a couple of top quality central defenders there, and he played himself in midfield instead. And Pat Nolan, we talked about right back. I mean, he was in Irish squads at the time, played for the Interleague on a regular basis. So unfortunate not to get a senior cap. You had the likes of Johnny Walsh in midfield. What a player, playing beside Owen. Tony Morris, Des Kennedy up front, Ger Duggan, so many good players, Tony Meaney in that team.
Explain to us what it was like to go see this. I presume you went and saw this kind of this season unfold. At the start of the season, I know they had a good start to the season, but was there a feeling that this Limerick side could go all the way?
No, I mean, definitely not. I mean, I was very fortunate. I missed one game that season, Sligo Rovers, one domestic game, Sligo Rovers away at 5:30 on a Sunday evening in September. We started the season, I mean, we lost to Linfield in the Tyler Cup, then played Cork United in the League Cup. We were beaten on penalties. It's probably the only occasion I ever saw Tony Meaney miss a penalty, and that was even the second time round. The shootout went to 12 penalties, and wow. I think it was 9-8. Cork United beat us in the end. People talk about the legendary crowds at the Markets Field, and definitely that's correct. But at the start of the season, there was only a couple of hundred at the UCD game. UCD at home, they were the newcomers to the League of Ireland. And it looked like being a humiliating, embarrassing defeat for them. They were two down in a few minutes. But they steadied the ship. It finished 2-0, but they had chances actually to get a goal back. And anyone walking out of the Markets Field that day, there is no way you would have said you saw the champions. It was pretty routine win. A little bit disappointing having started so well, but the worst signs went up a week later. As I said, the Sligo game was on at 5:30 on a Sunday evening. We won 3-2. That was a good win. I mean, Sligo were no poor side at that stage. They'd been champions in 77. Mm-hmm. So it was still the bones of a good side there. They finished in the top 4 or 5 that season. There was a little bit of a boost then. Cork United coming to town in the Markets Field. There was a bit bigger crowd than normal. And the third game is really where it started to kick off and people started to believe. Owen Hand scored all 4 goals. So we beat Cork United 4-1. Wow. Owen Hand got 4 goals and there was the hype. I mean, he was an Irish international. He was player manager and suddenly, yeah, we might have been expected to beat Cork United, but to beat them 4-1, Owen to get the 4 goals, the hype started. And the next game was 2 weeks later at home to Bohemians. And Limerick got a massive crowd. Now, there's a tradition in Limerick. You do well, you get a couple of good results, you get a huge crowd up to the Markets Field, and you flop.
That's a story I know very well.
It's a story that still goes to this day. But that season, it didn't apply, and it almost did. We were playing Bohemians. And it was Billy Young's Bohemians. We talked about them. Fantastic side. Very solid at the back. Very difficult to break down. And the game headed into the 90th minute. It was still 0-0. And I think that's when people first started to believe. Because, I mean, Bohs had been champions 2 years earlier. Owen Hand got the winner with almost the last kick of the game. And Limerick won 1-0. And the buzz around the Markets Field, the celebrations that day, I'm pretty sure it was the first time I saw Limerick beat Bohs. I think we hadn't beaten them at home for, I think, almost a decade. And it was a huge win. And that kind of kick-started the title. So we'd won 4 games in a row and we were top of the league. Went to Thurles a week later and unfortunately dropped points. We drew 3-3. I think we led 3 times, Tony Morris with a hat-trick. But so that was maybe the start of the wobble.
So explain to us a little bit about, because one of the things that I find interesting about the situation as well is Owen Hand, number one, he's player manager. And you kind of mentioned it at the start, which was for him to turn around and say, actually, there's a player better than me for that position. I'm going to let him play there. I'll play somewhere else. And the second thing is to be able to turn around to your players and say, why can't we win this? Like what's in our makeup that tells us we can't go on and win this league title? So Owen Hand plays a very big part in realizing what he's got on his hands and also making that work for the season as well, doesn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, to take a look and say Joe Mahony and Brendan Storm, and they were two absolute quality players, legends of Limerick football. But I mean, it was the smarts as manager to say, yeah, I'll play in midfield because I don't want to be breaking up that partnership. And he did instill a belief in the players. There's no doubt about that. I've spoken to some of the legends of the time. There is absolutely no doubt that Owen Hand put a belief in them that hadn't been there, that they could go on and win things and be a top side. And I mean, it if you're looking at league tables from that time, the league win came out of nowhere, but Owen Hand made a massive difference.
So the season goes on. It wouldn't be a Limerick kind of major winning season without a harem scarum, helter skelter finish, or you know, one that's really, really close. So tell us what happens in the run-in.
Yeah, so there was probably a few key moments in the season. So I talked about the late goals. We got late winners at home to Galway, then Tony Morris last gasp winner at home to Finn Harps. Dundalk came to town in November 1979, and the champions. And that was a key moment again, because it was also Malcolm MacDonald was meant to make his Limerick debut. And Malcolm MacDonald, Super Mac, maybe the younger players haven't heard of him, but they love a number nine. I've said it before on podcasts about Newcastle United. They love a number nine in Newcastle. And Super Mac, you mean, we talk about Jackie Milburn, you go back, you talk about Alan Shearer. Super Mac was one of their legends. And he was meant to play for Limerick, but unfortunately, he had to retire through injury and his insurance wouldn't allow him play. But he did. He was there that day against Dundalk. But in the end, we didn't need him. In a fantastic game in front of a huge crowd, we beat Dundalk 2-0 with two very late goals. And that, I think that day, that was when the real belief was that we could go on and win the league. I think anyone got out of the Marcus Field that day said we were definitely in the title race. We can win the league. Went to Milltown a week later, beat Shamrock Rovers 2-1. And at the turn of the year, we were in great shape. We were top of the table. I think we were 5 points clear. Dundalk had a game in hand. And that's when the wheels came off. So a draw away to Cork United, a draw at home to a Drogheda team we'd hammered a couple of weeks earlier. And then we lost to Bowes in Dalymount Park. And with the back match that Dundalk actually, they joined us at the top of the table a couple of days after the Bowes game. We were dead level. And at that point, it wasn't looking good for Limerick. But another important thing Owen did was he brought the squad away. So instead of returning back to Limerick after that Bohemians game, they flew to England for a week, played a friendly against Waterlooville, trained against Portsmouth, and trained with Portsmouth, sorry, and just had a break away as a squad. And I think that was, Owen had recognised that things maybe had gone a little stale, I said dropped a few points we shouldn't have dropped, and that did revitalise the squad, came back and hammered Thurles 5-0 and went on a bit of a run to regain the lead at the top of the league. I have to mention an absolutely crucial game away to Finn Harps in February 1980, 2-0 down after 16 minutes. And again, people said typical Limerick, we've blown the title. RTE wrongly said that Dundalk were 2-0 up in Waterford. They'd actually lost in Waterford that day. And Limerick came back from 2-0 down to beat Finn Harps 3-2. Wow. So instead of being behind in the title race, we'd extended our lead. And again, left in good shape. Went to Dundalk in the cup, beat Dundalk 1-0, goal from Tony Morris to get into the cup semi-final. A week later, back away to Dundalk in the league, 3 points clear at the top of the table. And I think even a draw, a win, and it was game over, and we lost 1-0 a week after beating them in the cup. And then it was really, as Alex Ferguson would say, squeaky bum time. So 1 point clear at the top of the table, a nervy, very, very nervy 2-1 win over Shamrock Rovers. We were praying for the final whistle as Rovers were peppering the goal in the Marcus Field. We held on for the points. kept the 1 point lead, went to Kilcone Park away to Waterford a week before playing them in the cup, actually. This was a big game. Waterford were near the top of the table. They weren't in the title race, but they were a big team. Dundalk were at home to Home Farm, which was a guaranteed win, we would have thought. And the game in Kilcone Park was a game for the ages. Al Finucane playing against his old club. He had the game of his life. We went goal down. We went 3-1 up. Waterford came back. Al Finucane headed the equaliser with 15 minutes to go. It was pouring rain. It was mud. It was a massive crowd. And the atmosphere was incredible. 10 minutes to go, Tony Morris sticks the ball in the top corner to win the game for Limerick. And the referee disallows it to give a free in to Limerick. And there was uproar and the crowd was going berserk. And I mean, I don't know if the referee would have got off that pitch alive, but own hand, coolest man in the place, puts the ball down for the free kick and puts it in the same top corner that Tony Morris had put it in. And Limerick won 4-3. And to crown the day, around the same time that own hand was winning the game for Limerick, Mick Fairclough was winning the game for Dundalk with a last gasp winner against Home Farm, only for a linesman to stick up his flag as Oriel Park celebrated. And the goal was disallowed and Dundalk only drew nil all with Home Farm. One of their more frustrating days. So the 1 point lead became 2 points. And that ultimately became crucial because on the last day of the season, because Limerick had played in the cup, Dundalk had finished their season. Limerick were level. So they'd one game left away to Athlone, and a draw would have given the title to Limerick. And that's how it was done. A goal down, a very nervy performance. Tony Meaney, I said, the only time I ever saw him miss a penalty was away to Cork United in the League Cup at Flower Lodge at the start of the season. He had a penalty to win the league in Athlone, and he rarely missed, and he didn't miss that day. And it was a fantastic win, the only league title in my lifetime. And it was hard fought and it was hard won.
Absolutely, yeah. What were the celebrations like?
Oh, they were incredible. I think there were about 5,000 Limerick people in Athlone that day. St. Mel's Park was absolutely mobbed. I mean, everyone that was out on the pitch, everyone invaded the pitch in those days. Wow. There's RTE footage. I'm actually in the footage over on Hand's shoulder. So I have the proof that I was there. it was just mad wild celebrations. It just meant so much to win the league that day. And it was so nervy in the end, and somehow we got over the line. And of course, we thought in those days we'd challenge for leagues for years to come. But it remains the last time the title has come to Limerick.
Yeah, absolutely. But was there a parade through the city or anything like that?
Yeah, there's actually some footage again on YouTube, and it's not very dignified, I suppose. But the players are in the back of a flat van. Really, it doesn't look. It doesn't look like much, but there was great celebrations. There was a parade. It was a big deal, you know, and it meant a lot to win the league.
Absolutely, yeah. And you'd go on to win the cup in a year or two later, but we'll get to that in a bit. But it's the start of the decade, and along with yourselves, Limerick was a surprise win then. What is Athlone the next season? Is it as much of a surprise? Because the season before, I think they were third. So maybe they were in and about.
Yeah, they were third. I mean, I look back at league tables and they were always in the hunt. But they didn't really, it really felt like it had been a two-horse race when we were in the middle of it. It certainly felt like that to me between ourselves and Dundalk, but they did finish third. Limerick didn't beat them that season. They got two draws. They drew in the Markets Field as well. They were only a few points behind at the end of the season. So they were definitely a coming team. And but it probably was a little bit of a surprise that they won the league the following season. And they did it. I think they only lost, was it two matches? I think they lost two of their first three games, if I remember right, because I still feel, in Limerick terms, it's one that got away, in that Limerick finished 1980 well clear at the top of the league. We'd gone to Athlone, I think was on Stephen's Day, or maybe just after Christmas anyway, maybe the 27th, and played out a fantastic nil-all draw. A few days later, we went to the showgrounds and really tough game. We went to Sligo, away to Sligo, and had won 2-0. Had earlier gone to Oriel Park in November and beaten Dundalk 1-0, a late Joe Mahony penalty. So it was a feeling we'd played all the big teams away from home. We were 3 or 4 points clear at the top. And at the turn of the year, we were favourites for the title. And, I mean, we finished 10 points behind Athlone. Mm. Now, in fairness, Athlone had gone on an incredible run. And they'd gone unbeaten since September. And yeah, but Limerick just fell apart.
I've got it here in front of me. They did only lose two games.
Yeah, and I think they were two of the first three games, if I remember correctly. So Limerick lost to Cork United at home in early January 1981. And it all fell apart after that, really. We were never... it was Dundalk that actually finished second. And Athlone came to the Marsfield needing a result to win the title. And they certainly made us sweat in St. Mel's Park a year earlier. They had no nerves or anything to worry about. They were just, they ran out comfortable 2-0 winners. The league title was never in doubt that day.
That Athlone side kind of, they did hang around for a while after that too, didn't they? Because they win the league two seasons from then, so 83. And then they're third in 84 and 85. So they did have a kind of, I suppose, a good period where they were in and about. They were in the mix.
Absolutely. I mean, they were, as you said, they won the league again in 83. I mean, you're the likes of Michael O'Connor, Padraig O'Connor, Noel Larkin, some really, really quality players. Stephen Fenwick, Mick Smith in goal. I mean, okay, Harry McHugh at the back. They had some really, really good players. There was also an epic FAI Cup semi-final in 1982 when Limerick beat them after a replay and went on to win the Cup. Athlone, they haven't won the men's FAI Cup since 1924. I know the women had a fantastic triumph there. Was it 2023? But they're still awaiting a men's FAI Cup. I mean, Limerick beat them as well in a Cup replay, I remember, in St. Mel's Park. I think that would have been 84, was it? Yeah, it was 84. And they won the league in 83. They weren't, I think they lost one game all season in 1983. They won the league at a canter. Dundalk had won it the year before. I mean, it was a really, really good Dundalk side as well. Some quality players there. So Limerick didn't really threaten to win the league after that collapse in 80-81. But Athlone, they hung around and said they won those two titles.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about it in the previous episode about the League of Ireland in the 1970s, but that Dundalk side was a really good side. They'd won it in 79, runner-up to Limerick, runner-up to Athlone, and then won it again in 82. So that was a really good Dundalk side that was around at the same time as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, they were making a big impact in Europe as well. I mean, I think Tottenham beat them by the odd goal. They drew with them in Oriel Park and lost by a goal at White Hart Lane. They had, as I said, they came so close to knocking out Celtic. They played really well against Liverpool as well. They were only narrowly beaten at Anfield. That great Liverpool team won all those leagues and European Cups. I mean, it was a really, really good Dundalk side. And they won the Dublin 79 runner-up. I mean, Richie Blackmore in goal, I think this season they were runner-up to Limerick. He set a League of Ireland clean sheets record with number of clean sheets and shattered the record. I think he had the record set by January, if I remember correctly, and shattered the previous record. So, I mean, it was a really, really good Dundalk side under Jim McLaughlin. And of course, we can go on. I mean, you can call the 1980s the Jim McLaughlin decade if you want to.
Yeah. Before we get on to that, I wanted to talk. So, Athlone win it the league in 82, 83. But I wanted to come back and talk about our old friends, Sligo Rovers, who had suffered decades and decades of heartache in the cup and that kind of stuff. But in 82, 83, they get over the line, don't they? They finally do it.
I mean, there's been so many hard luck stories. And I mean, it's Sligo Rovers, I probably won't even remember half of them. But we won about 1970 in Bohemians in three games. The 1978 final and why John Carpenter never holidayed in Sligo again. There have been so many of them. And 1983, well, you even go back to the semi-final in 1983 in Sligo Rovers and Cove Ramblers. I mean, Cork had no senior football side at the time. Cork United had gone bust at the end of 81-82 season. But non-league Cove Ramblers, and I have to talk about Cove Ramblers to put Sligo Rovers in context. They were drawn against the league champions Dundalk in the FAI Cup. And they beat them. They knocked them out. Went on and beat Finn Harps. Got to the semi-finals of the FAI Cup. And in a packed Flower Lodge played Sligo Rovers and played them off the park, leading 1-0. And to win a cup, you need a bit of luck as well. And with Sligo Rovers fans already on their way home, Mick Graham headed the last gasp equaliser to bring the game to a replay. And it turned out to be a four-game epic. I think Sligo were 2-0 up in the next game. Cove came back to draw 2-2, back down to Flower Lodge, another draw, back up to Sligo. And it may have even needed extra time. I can't recall exactly. There was certainly a few periods of extra time. But Sligo beat them, I think, 3-2 in the fourth game.
Wow.
To eventually reach the cup final. And, I mean, Bohemians, a year earlier in a neutral Dalymount Park, had been beaten by Limerick and Brendan Storer. And now in another neutral Dalymount Park, they had Sligo Rovers. And again, Bohs were hot favourites. They were one of the teams that were up challenging for titles at the time. But Sligo Rovers, in the rain in Dalymount, pulled off an incredible 2-1 win. It was Tony Stenson, Harry McLaughlin with the goals. And what a game, what a win. And the celebrations in Sligo were a sight to behold at that stage. It meant so much. And they'd been waiting so long for that FAI Cup win.
Yeah, and it just goes to show, like, that I suppose all the decades of hurt and all the decades of pain, and finally they get over the line. It must have been an extraordinary celebration, and I suppose a bit of luck along the way for the Bitter Red as well.
Yeah, definitely a bit of luck with that Cove Ramblers game on the first day. I mean, they seemed to be dead and buried that day, and Mick Graham headed in that equaliser. I was actually down at that match. My dad drove down from Limerick because we didn't have a game that day, and it was such an epic occasion to be there. I think my father actually got to a couple of the games up in Sligo. I didn't see any of the others because of school or whatever else. But I certainly remember that first game and the massive crowd in Flower Lodge. And Sligo were definitely lucky that day. But they've been so unlucky. You go back to 1939 in Dixie Dean. They were beaten again a year later by Shamrock Rovers. They'll talk about 1970. There were so many hard luck stories. They feel hard done by, I think, we beat them in the semi-final in 66. I mean, there's so many Sligo Rovers hard luck FAI Cup stories. So to get over the line in the rain and mud of Dalymount Park in 1983, I they've won league titles, they've won FAI Cups since then. But I think that day is probably the greatest day in Sligo Rovers history.
Fantastic. And obviously we can't move on before talking about the season before, when Limerick, of course, were FAI Cup champions. Explain to us about that kind of that cup winning side, because it was on the back of winning the league title the year before. So this was still a very good Limerick side that was heading to the cup final.
Yeah, it was still a very strong side. So they said they won the league in 1980, had challenged for the first half of the following season. Things hadn't gone the club's way in 81-82, dropped a few points, were already off the pace in the league. But there was a strong feeling. I remember in January 82, Owen Hand, still manager, feeling was, okay, we're not going as well as we were in the league. We're going to win the cup. And before a ball was kicked, I can remember saying, we're going to win the cup, and people saying it. And it proved to be correct. There was a beat Bluebell in the first round in up in the Ivy Grounds in Crumlin, 1-0. I think it was Tommy Gaynor got the goal. It was a routine win over non-league opposition. Had to play Shelburne away midweek under the lights in Talca. And it was a resurgent Shelburne. So Shelburne had been in the doldrums for a couple of years. They had re-energised the side. It was a real cracking cup tie. We beat them 2-1 with a late goal. Fantastic atmosphere under the lights in Talca. And that was kind of the boost for Limerick. Put Limerick in a quarter-final. Non-league opposition, Aer Lingus in the cup. And there were a lot of jokes, actually, that Aer Lingus were going to be good in the air. Limerick won the game before, if I remember correctly, with four-headed goals. So
the joke we beat was them on them.
We beat them 4-0. I can't remember Limerick scoring from four headers at any other stage, but we won that game 4-0, missed a penalty as well, and I remember Tony Ward being out of this world playing fantastic stuff. I mean, Tony was a story of that season as well, because, I mean, people may not remember, he was a star of the Irish rugby team. And there was a huge debate. We talked today about Sam Prendergast and Jack Crowley, for those who are into rugby, and who should be the starting 10 for Ireland. Well, it was all out war in those days between... Now, Ollie Campbell was a fantastic player, don't get me wrong. And Tony actually was a son of Dublin. But, I mean, he was an adopted Limerick man and playing for Munster. And you wouldn't hear a good word about Ollie Campbell in Limerick, and you wouldn't hear a good word about Tony Ward in Dublin. But so, and I mean, in fairness, I have to hold my hat off. Ollie Campbell was magnificent. We went and won in Australia in 79. He was a magnificent rugby player, the star of the 82 Triple Crown winning team. But there was strong feelings in Limerick that Tony was hard done by, and he was dropped off the panel, the rugby panel. So he ended up, it was rugby's loss was Limerick's football gain, because he ended up playing for Limerick, starred against Southampton home and away in the UEFA Cup earlier that season.
Wow.
And was a key man in that cup run. I mentioned we beat Athlone Town in the semi-final after a replay. Again, 15 minutes to go, Tommy Gaynor, I think he was only about 17 at the time, he was put clean through in goal, and Mick Smith, the legendary goalkeeper for Athlone, Shamrock Rovers, playing since the 1960s. And Tommy Gaynor had the coolness to dummy Mick Smith and send him sprawling one way and calmly roll the ball into the other corner to make it 1-0, to score the only goal in a cup semi-final replay in Talca Park. The nerves of steel, I don't know, what can you say? And so we went into the cup final. Tony Ward took the corner. Brendan Storen didn't score too many goals for Limerick, but he got the winning goal that day. It's a good job and never dropped him in 1979.
What was that cup final win like? Because I know there's obviously subsequent stories that we've heard. You've told them as well before about, you know, the Shamrock Rovers kind of captain just kind of dropping the cup into the boot of his car and kind of driving away. Yeah, class, we won the cup again. What to cities and towns, perhaps outside of Dublin, winning things like this, you know, was out of the norm. So what was it like to see that happen yourself, first of all, in your own lifetime, but also like this kind of incredible kind of atmosphere that would have come with it, with the players coming home and all of these kind of different things?
Yeah, so I mean, I did talk, the 71 Cup win, which I've no memory of, I did make a couple of games as a four-year-old at the end of that season, but I've only very vague memories, and I've no memories of us winning the Cup. That is generally considered in Limerick to be the greatest moment in the club's history, because of the hard luck stories, and as you said, the 65 and 66 defeats to Rovers. And going on to 82, it's the last time either of the major trophies in Irish football has resided in the city. We haven't won a league or an FAI Cup since. Appreciate the League Cups. But it meant a lot. It didn't mean to me as much as the 1980 league win. That was the only league win in my lifetime. But it certainly meant a lot to win the Cup. If you can't win the league in a season, the next best thing is to win the FAI Cup. And it was special. There was big celebrations again, a civic reception, parade through the city, big crowds to see the FAI Cup. I've actually got some photographs of the crowds outside up by Colbert Station there. There were great memories of winning the Cup. And in some ways, it didn't feel like it at the time, but it was probably the end. It was certainly the end of the trophies for that team. And Owen Hand, of course, left as well. So we didn't realise that at the time, to concentrate on the national team. But it meant so much, and it does mean so much when, I suppose, if you get the likes of a Shamrock Rovers, they're so used to winning leagues and cups. I'm sure it means a lot to the Rovers fans, but there have been so many they can talk about.
Yeah, I don't mean to be like against one particular part of the country, but for Dublin clubs to win kind of titles or to win cups, etc., it's kind of seen as a bit of a given. I think it's fair to say that when you're in the capital and you're a quote unquote big club, you should be in and around winning a league title, or you should be in and around winning a cup. So it seems that when it happens outside of Dublin, that it should be what it is. It is a big deal. It's an important deal. And also because Dublin clubs have dominated the landscape for obvious reasons of League of Ireland and FA Cup down through the decades.
Yeah, I think it is a bigger deal because the whole city, the whole Midwest will come out and join the celebrations. And you will get people who may not go to the Markets Field all season, but will suddenly show up and go to Dublin for the Cup final. I mean, that was certainly the case. We would have brought more people to Dublin for that Cup final than we had at any home game that season. And I mean, I'll talk about another cup win. That I mean, the day we won the league, as Joe Manny was lifting the league title in that loan, Al Finucane was lifting the FAI Cup for Waterford, and neither of the two major trophies have gone to Waterford since that day. Wow. That they haven't won a league or a cup since. So, and that meant so much in Waterford. It's 45 years ago now since they won the cup. Mm. But as you say, it means more, I think, in the provinces than maybe it does in Dublin.
And that's an interesting segue into probably one of the greatest League of Ireland sides of all time. And that, of course, is Shamrock Rovers, who do four in a row in the league. They do three in a row in the cup. First of all, talk to us about, you mentioned him already, but talk to us about the manager. Where does he come from and how does he find himself at Shamrock Rovers?
Jim McLaughlin, legendary manager. Jim was a Derryman. He was a Northern Ireland international, famously scored two goals against England in Windsor Park in the 1960s. Great player. He was player-manager at Dundalk, at great Dundalk team in the 70s. Was still manager, won doubles in Dundalk. Made a huge difference there. Still very fondly remembered there. And he was tempted away. I think he replaced Johnny Giles directly, but tempted away for Shamrock Rovers to manage them. And look, I can't do Jim McLaughlin justice, but he's without doubt the greatest League of Ireland manager of all time. Wow. But I couldn't do his abilities. I mean, it's not even in question when you go on. I mean, he was also the manager of that Derry treble winning side, you know. So he was the manager at Shamrock Rovers. Johnny Giles had definitely made huge improvements in Shamrock Rovers. He had him playing a style of football. He had got the crowds back to Milltown, won the FAI Cup. But there was a feeling they just didn't get over the line in the league. Jim McLaughlin, I suppose the one thing he did add was an element of steel to the team. He brought Darren McKeeley from Dundalk to Shamrock Rovers. And, well, I talked in another podcast about, let's say, playing it out from the back in some cultured defenders. And Shamrock Rovers would have had a cultured defender in the likes of Jacko McDonough. What a defender Jacko. Jacko could pass the ball with the best of John Stones, etc. Dermot Keeley was a fantastic defender. He was very much old school, and he wouldn't get away with a lot of his challenges today, let's say. And even then, he picked up a lot of bookings, but he was very much an enforcer on that Shamrock Rovers team. You had Pat Byrne in midfield. You had Paddy Dunning at the back as well. I think he'd come from Dundalk as well. You had Pat Byrne in midfield, a fantastic midfield player. He had signed Noel Larkin up front. He had Alan Campbell. He had Liam Buckley. Some fantastic players in that. And I'm probably forgetting Jody Byrne in goal. He obviously needed a great goalkeeper as well. John Cody at fullback. Sorry, I'm actually forgetting players now, and it's going to look really bad. But it was a really fantastic Shamrock Rovers side that dominated. I mean, they didn't just win the leagues. They dominated those leagues. And I mean, I have to give a shout out to UCD, who pulled off one of the greatest FAI That's Cup right. shocks yeah, of all yeah. time. Beating them in the 1984 FAI Cup final after a replay. And our own Joe Hanrahan from Limerick was on that side. Ken O'Doherty with the winner. And that was a huge shock and an incredible achievement by UCD to beat, not only to beat Shamrock Rovers in that cup final, to beat one of the greatest Shamrock Rovers teams of all time.
Jim McLaughlin, then, in terms of his playing style and what he brings to Shamrock Rovers, because we've talked about how Johnny Giles kind of professionalised it a bit more, a little bit more intricate in kind of prep and all that kind of stuff. So what does Jim do to, I suppose, bring that up again and turn this team not into maybes, but into a dominant winning side?
He certainly carried on from the level of professionalism, the level of preparation that Johnny Giles had. If I had to say one thing that I thought was different in his teams, it was the element of steel. I think Johnny Giles' team played some lovely football, but they didn't have... You certainly could get amongst them and maybe kick them off the park a little bit. You wouldn't kick any Jim McLaughlin team off the park, because not only had you Dermot Keeley, I mean, Pat Byrne was a fantastic midfield player, a fantastic passer of the ball, but he was also well able to look after himself. And I think that Shamrock Rovers team under McLaughlin had a lot more steel to them. And they were, look, you wouldn't beat them. They were so tough to beat and such a great side. And if there was one weakness, I would say, is it's a real pity they didn't do more in Europe. And I actually went up to some of the European games. I mean, I remember a cracking game against Celtic it was 1986, and they should have beaten them off the park in Milltown. I think it was Murdoch McLeod got a very, very late winner for Celtic, and they won 1-0. But Rovers more than matched them that day. And another absolutely brilliant European tie was in 1984 when they played Linfield. And it was David Jeffrey as a player in the Linfield team. It was Roy Coyle's great Linfield side of the 1980s that won so many leagues as well. And David Jeffrey got the only... It was 0-0 in Windsor Park. I went to return with my dad in Milltown, and it ended up 1-1. David Jeffrey with the goal for Linfield, that they stole it. Well, they didn't steal it. Look, it was a great tie. It was an epic game. They won it on away goals, but Neville Steedman was absolutely magnificent that day. As another name I'd actually forgotten on that great Rovers 4-0 team. Neville Steedman, he'd signed from Thurles. He destroyed John Garrett, the Linfield right back, who was a top player. And just the ball would not go in the net for the last 20 minutes. And somehow George Dunlop and Linfield escaped with a 1-1 draw. And they knocked Rovers out on away goals. But an absolutely cracking game, and one I still remember to this day, whatever, over 40 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I suppose that Shamrock Rovers winning side, they apart from probably 85, 86, they win the league with games to spare in all the others. But it's the one in, I suppose, 85, 86, where it's a duel between them and Galway to I suppose, for the majority of the season. What's your kind of recollection of that and how tight it was?
So, yeah, I suppose another recollection I have of that season is the opening match of that season. We actually beat Shamrock Rovers in Rathbaan. And Tommy Lynch was absolutely brilliant and scored at least one of the goals, if not two. So we name started the season.
Limerick. Always name dropping.
Absolutely. but in fairness, to Galway had got to the cup final a year earlier, and that was another Limerick one that got away because we were 2-0 up in the semi final, and there was a place in Europe at stake. And Galway came roaring back and won the semi final replay in Athlone in extra time with a John Mannion goal. But so Galway were a coming team. They did push Rovers all the way. My recollection from the time was that Rovers just, they knew how to win leagues. Jim McLaughlin knew how to get them over the line. And so Galway did push them, but I didn't feel that anyone other than Shamrock Rovers were going to win the league. That would have been the 3 in a row, if I remember correctly. So
yeah. Do we know anything about that Galway side? Because again, it's one of those kind of League of Ireland kind of anomaly things where they kind of appear, they have this great season, and they seem to just kind of flitter away a little bit. Then after that, it was their kind of season where it all came together, but they just fell that little bit short.
They would have had, I mean, again, I probably won't do justice in remembering some of the names, but I mean, Eamon Deasy would still have been playing in that team. They would have had Tom Lally in goal, fine goalkeeper, had been over at Celtic actually for a while in the 70s. I think Jimmy Nolan, John Mannion would have been on that team. Again, I think Gerry Daly would have played. And there were some of the players that were still around when they actually went on into the 90s, when they eventually did get to win the FAI Cup. Mm. So it was a good Galway side. And they had the advantage of Terryland Park and a really passionate crowd backing them there as well, the old Terryland, before they turned the pitch around. But just Jim McLaughlin and Shamrock Rovers, there would have been a level of professionalism, a level of just being used to winning games and used to winning leagues. And it's very hard to come from nowhere to win a league like that, particularly when you're up against the likes of Jim McLaughlin, Shamrock Rovers. So if there's one thing to say for that Galway side, I mean, they lost a cup final, they lost a league a year later. They were probably really unfortunate to come at a time when Shamrock Rovers were in the pump.
Yeah, and one of the things that I notice as well is you kind of mentioned that it's all well and good to win leagues by 6 points or 10 points or whatever, but they seem to know how to grind out victories. There's quite a number of 1-0s in that season where Galway were runners up. So they knew how to. A sign of good champions is you win. Maybe you're not playing so well, but you still win. So they knew how to grind as well. Like you said, they had the steel.
They had the steel. I mean, any team that is Dermot Keeley at the back, Jody Byrne in goal, Jacko McDonough. I mean, they had quality players, and they were very tough to break down. They were tough to beat. And any Jim McLaughlin side, even when they weren't playing well, they'll always kind of find a way to get a result. I mean, I remember going to a couple of Limerick away games. I remember a couple of draws in Milltown, and a couple of them probably felt we could have won, that maybe Rovers weren't at their best, because Limerick was still a really good side at that stage. Just kind of very much nearly men, and we, at one point, it looked like we might challenge them in 83, 84, but fell away. But we got some good results against them, but we didn't have anything like the consistency that Jim McLaughlin, Shamrock Rovers had, and just find a way to get a result even when they're not at their best.
I'm kind of looking back at it now in front of me and thinking about all the podcasts that we've done before this. I don't think there's been a team that's had the kind of dominance that they had. This is a team that won 4 in a row, three cups in a row, and a treble double. So a double winning season in 3 seasons in a row. I don't think there's any team in the League of Ireland, and you're more knowledgeable of this than me, but like that has had that kind of period where they just won everything that was in front of them.
I think with the doubles, you have to say there is that level. I mean, the teams in the argument would certainly be the Cork United team that won five leagues in six seasons, won a couple of FAI Cups in the 40s, and the Waterford team that won six leagues in eight seasons. But I think Rovers fans would point out there's no doubles in... Cork United won a double in 41, but there were no... Waterford failed. That Waterford team failed to win an FAI Cup. And, yeah, I mean, Rovers were just so dominant. And, I mean, they beat Limerick in the last FAI Cup game in the Old Markets Field was... they beat us the cup, a late Terry Everston goal to win 1-0. We felt we could have beaten them that day, but they just found a way to win. And they always found a way to win when it mattered. They just always found a way. And that's the sign of great champions. And look, there's absolutely no doubt about it. Jim McLaughlin, Shamrock Rovers side were absolutely great champions, if not the greatest of all time. I don't know, they still sing songs about that team in Tala, and they should, because they were just a magnificent side. And I know Stephen Bradley's won four leagues in a row, and look, he's done a fantastic job at Shamrock Rovers, but he didn't win any doubles, you know, so the standards are very high there.
I was just about to say, that's the highest standard I think I've ever heard of. Like, it's like, if you don't win a double, you're just not good enough.
Look, you can't be critical. Look, four leagues, they could well go on and win it this year as well. He'll point out they won the cup in 2020 as well. So, not to mind all their fantastic. I mean, I suppose to be fair to Stephen Bradley, he's had some fantastic success in Europe, which, as I said, that Shamrock Rovers team just. Now, they lost to a brilliant Linfield team on away goals. They lost a fantastic Honvéd side. They lost, unluckily, to a great Celtic side. So there were some hard luck stories in Europe. And they were, of course, playing in the European Cup in September in the first round in those days against fellow champions. But there is a feeling they could have made a difference in Europe. And it just wasn't to be. Even that Linfield side that beat Rovers, they went on to nearly knock out Panathinaikos. They were beating them 3-0 in Belfast, and Panathinaikos scored, came back from 3-0 down to draw 3-3.
Wow.
I think it had been 2-1 in Greece. So it was a really great Linfield side as well that just edged out Shamrock Rovers on away goals, just lost to Panathinaikos in the next round. So, I mean, there's what might have been and all the sad stories again, but certainly at home, Jim McLaughlin and Shamrock Rovers team were totally dominant, and four leagues in a row, three doubles in a row, it speaks for itself.
I wanted to talk to you as well about something that happened in the middle of that that run as well, which is we got the Premier Division that we kind of have now. Do we know where this kind of came from, the necessity for it? Why did it change?
No, I think it was probably a good thing. We never had relegation in the League of Ireland. And it was also a way of seeing of bringing the league to more places around the country. So let me get my timing right. So Longford, if I remember correctly, actually joined the league. So it was a couple of teams joined the league in 83-84. And you would have had, in 84-85, you had Cork City coming back. I think Longford joined. And then you had a new League of Ireland season in 85-86 where you had a Premier Division and a First Division. So you had the likes of Bray Wanderers came in. You didn't have a team in Bray since Bray Unknowns left in the early 1940s. You had a new team in Monaghan. I think Longford had come in a year beforehand. Newcastle West came in County Limerick. So you had a second team in Limerick. Wow. And so it was a way of bringing new teams into the league, having promotion and relegation, which certainly improved the interest and the excitement for fans. Because if you go back into, and I remember in the 70s, once you went out of the FAI Cup, your season was over. And you often saw clubs release players. They'd be playing out the last few matches of the season. Nothing at stake. But suddenly you've got relegation at stake now as well. So there's a lot more at stake. So the introduction of the Premier Division for 85-86 and, of course, the First Division made a huge difference. And also, of course, you had the advent of Derry City in the League of Ireland, which was an absolutely massive story at the time.
And explain to us the the that kind of the Derry situation, because is it fair to say that it's that it was complicated, or was it just are we complicated from our point of view?
It was a huge story. So Derry City had been in the Irish League since, I think, 1929. And so they played in the Irish League from 1929 up until 72-73 season. And in the early 70s, I mean, the troubles in Northern Ireland were at their zenith. Mm. And there was issues in the Brandywell. There was a Ballymena bus burned out. There was, I think you know where the Brandywell is in Derry. It's in a very nationalist area. And there had been concerns about some of the clubs travelling to play in the Brandywell. Derry were forced to play, after the Ballymena bus burning incident, they were forced to play some games 30 miles away in Coleraine, play home games. And that was a huge drain on the club. And the crowds had dropped as well. So they'd won a league in 65. They'd won an Irish Cup, I think, in 64. They'd got to the Cup final. They were beaten by Distillery, and Martin O'Neill, I think, got two goals in the final. A Derry man actually got two goals for Distillery to beat them in the 1971 Irish Cup final. But they'd gone out of football, so there was no senior football in Derry. Now, obviously, a club like Finn Harps benefited hugely from that. So the great Finn Harps team of the 70s included the likes of Tony O'Doherty, a Derry man, Brendan Bradley, who was a Derry man. You know, a lot of the players. Derry's always producing top quality football. So it was ironically the chairman of Finn Harps, Fran Fields, who was instrumental in getting Derry into the League of Ireland. So in the mid 1980s, there was no sign of any ceasefire or anything in Northern Ireland. It was still considered not safe to go to the Brandywell for the likes of Linfield, Glentoran, Portadown, etc. So there was special provision made, and they were allowed play in a cross-border league with UEFA permission. Fran Fields had pushed it very much. He was, even though there's a rivalry between Finn Harps and Derry now, I think they have to be very thankful to the late Fran Fields for getting into the League of Ireland. He was one of the main men behind it. So Derry were joined the First Division in 1985, and it's fair to say they brought colour, passion, and fantastic crowds. I mean, they were playing in front of 12,000 people in the Brandywell when most of the other First Division clubs were playing in front of a few hundred. Yeah. And it brought, now, I think it's also fair to say some clubs, unfortunately, ripped their fans off, because Stirling was a lot stronger than the Punt at the time. And the Derry fans had come en masse in buses, outnumbering the home fans in places like Monaghan, Longford, Newcastle West, Cove. They saw outnumbering them by 3 and 4 to 1. I mean, I was in college in Cork in the 80s, and I went out to see Cove Ramblers in Derry at the end of the season. They still outnumbered, and nothing matched. They outnumbered the Cove fans. And if they didn't have punts, they were just charged in Stirling. They were paying a lot more. And in some cases, I think prices went up for the Derry fans and everything. So I think some clubs probably should be apologising, but they will probably say they were small clubs with no money, and they took whatever opportunities they could get. But the Derry support in the 1980s was absolutely legendary, and the numbers they brought. They played Cork City in an FAI Cup tie around 1986, and there was a special train from Derry to Cork. There were buses were lined up for the game. They were beaten 1-0, quite unluckily, actually, but massive crowd in Flower Lodge. And
I was just going to ask, what was the thinking behind Derry coming into the League of Ireland? Was it just a question of safety? It would have been safer for everybody if they did, or was Derry like, actually, yeah, let's be part of, I suppose you would say, the Republic of Ireland's league? Is that kind of the thinking, and is that why Finn Harps kind of backed them up on it?
Yeah, I think Finn Harps did it as being good neighbours, and Fran Fields, I mean, he was president of the FAI as well. I mean, Derry had been without senior football for, 12, 13 years, 1972 to 1985. So I think the safety concerns in the Brandywell was a huge thing. I mean, it's not, it's right at the base of the Craigan. It's in a very, very nationalist area. I mean, even to this day, Derry is very much a divided city. On one side of the river, one side of the Foyle is pretty much nationalist, and on the other side, the waterside area is unionist. Now, I know Institute cross the river and play their home games in the Brandywell now, but thankfully, there's peace in Northern Ireland. But I mean, back in the 1980s, there were people being killed, so it wouldn't have been considered safe for fans, for opposing teams. And I think the Irish League just didn't want the situation where they had to deal with Linfield and Glentoran playing in the Brandywell and what that would entail from a security point of view. So it made sense for them to play across the border. It's only a couple of miles from the border, and it made sense for them just to play in the League of Ireland.
Talk to us about the promotion relegation aspect of it as well, because as you say, for decades and decades and decades, certainly since we've been doing this podcast, there was none, because I suppose that maybe the financial implications of having so many teams probably just wasn't maybe there. But what happens afterwards? Is it good for the league? Does it help the league bloom and grow, perhaps in places that didn't get an opportunity before? And this kind of closed shop of, you know, unless you're able to do this, you don't get in.
It certainly was very good for the league. No, I mean, you had big names like Shelburne and Waterford getting relegated. I mean, Limerick getting relegated in the 90s as well. I mean, so you had some surprising big names, like Sligo Rovers going down as well. So it did bring a lot more interest. I think it certainly was a shock to the system for teams to go down. And instead of being going to Shamrock Rovers, you're suddenly going to Monaghan United. And
what are you saying about Monaghan United?
sadly missed, actually. But it does seem like it.
And one of the things that I really love about the League of Ireland now is its geographical spread. It does have, between the two divisions, and I know we're getting essentially a third one in a couple of years as well, but that geographical spread around the country, in the Midlands, it's so important for the game, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, you had the likes of Enfa as well and Kilkenny. So it was, particularly in the 80s, it was well spread around the country. And all the major cities would have had a team. And wherever you are in the country, you wouldn't have had to travel that far to see a game. Maybe you could say the likes of Mayo, you could be a long distance away from either Galway or Sligo. But otherwise, wherever you are in the country, you wouldn't have to travel that far if you want to watch League of Ireland football. Now, I think it would be good to have a team in Kilkenny. I think it'd be nice to have a team back in Monaghan. There's someone, maybe the places we should, maybe a team in Meath as well. Hopefully there's going to be a team in Mayo in the new third tier. But certainly in the 1980s, the new First Division and obviously the Premier Division, it did bring a greater geographical spread to football in the country, and it did introduce the League of Ireland to new areas.
Yeah, and that's another interesting discussion, maybe for another podcast, but let's finish off the 80s here as well. We've got that incredible run from Shamrock Rovers and that incredible team, and then Dundalk popping up again as well. So Dundalk, they never really seem to have gone away. They just kind of seem to have been biding their time for a while, being third, second, and then they win it in 88.
Yeah, so they they'd lost the cup final in 87. And of course, a big thing in the demise of Shamrock Rovers was the demise of Milltown in Glenmalure Park, which is a sad, sad loss to the league. And I probably want to be careful what I say here, but it's very bitter for Shamrock Rovers fans, and rightly so, and what went on and everything there. But not only did they lose a fantastic ground, We lost the two best playing surfaces in the league, with Flower Lodge being lost in 1986, which is another sad day and another bitter dispute. So we lost Flower Lodge in 1986. We lost Milltown in 1987. They were the two best, arguably, well, sorry, not arguably, they were by far the two best playing surfaces in the league. You can argue which of them was the best, but both of them were fantastic and absolutely head and shoulders above any other pitch in the league in the 70s and 80s. And so to lose the two of those was a big blow. And then Shamrock Rovers never really recovered for a few years from losing Milltown.
Without getting into maybe the ins and outs of it or names or whatever, but what happens to the ground in Milltown? Why does it go?
So the ground was owned by the Jesuits and Rovers had it on a lease. And I do need to be very careful, but let's say the Jesuits were, I believe, under the impression they were selling the ground to Shamrock Rovers, and it got sold to the Kilcoyne family who owned Shamrock Rovers for, I think, the sum of £50,000. And even in 1980s Dublin, in Milltown, which is in a really, really nice area of Dublin, £50,000 was a steal. And it ended up getting sold for property development, I think, for £1 million. And Shamrock Rovers became more or less homeless overnight. They moved to Talca Park. They ended up playing in Daly Mount. They played games. They played at Richmond Park. Even played a home game in Turner's Cross. They played Limerick out in Baldonnell. I mean, they played in the RDS. They played all over Dublin before playing. I'm probably forgetting a couple as well. They played in Santry. Sorry, they played in Santry as well. I'm sure Bose fans will remember. I won't go into that one, Roddy. So they played all over Dublin before getting their fantastic home in Tala. So Rovers actually definitely suffered from that. And Milltown is a sad, sad loss. There is there's houses on the pitch now. There is a plaque there to show the Shamrock Rovers once played there. But if you go past what used to be a very famous League of Ireland ground, now it's just houses.
Wow, extraordinary. Yeah. And they didn't win the league after that four in a row till mid-90s, wasn't it? So it was about another 10 years.
Yeah, they won it in the 90s, and that was even a little bit of a shock. That kind of came from nowhere, that league title as well. And then they didn't win it again, obviously, until they went to Tala, if I remember correctly.
You know? Yeah. I want to talk to you about the 88-89 season. We talked about Derry arriving into the League of Ireland. They obviously go up from the first division in that time frame. Where does this league win come from? Because it seems like it just another one of those anomalies in a small sense, probably this time, but they just kind of they're up and they're winning league titles. Where does this come from?
Well, I mean, I have to say, Dundalk won the double in 88 and they beat Derry in the cup final. So Derry were a coming team and they had fantastic support. But I mean, I was actually at that cup final. It was but Dundalk were much the better side and deserved to win. But Derry were definitely coming. And I mean, I have to mention the name again, is Jim McLaughlin. I mean, that's where it came from. So now there was a bit of a dispute in Derry. Noel King had been manager, Jim McLaughlin had taken over. There was a little bit of bitterness there, and I don't want to get into the ins and outs of that. He certainly signed some quality players. He had the likes of John Cody there. He'd Noel Larkin, some of the names we talked about from that great Rovers team. I think Jack McDonough was on that Derry side as well. He had Liam Coyle up front. What a player. Unfortunately, he got some bad injuries and didn't fulfil, but he was a Northern Ireland international, the son of Fay Coyle. His father was a great player for Derry in the 60s in the Irish League. But so it was a great Derry side. I have to mention Limerick as well. Sorry. Because I will... the one team that now we didn't really threaten them, but there was a game in Rathbann early in 1989, and Limerick were in the title race, and Derry came to Rathbann, and had we won, I think we would have been within a couple of points of them and potentially could have pushed them to the title. We'd actually drawn in, we'd gone to the Brandywell earlier in the season, got a one-all draw up there. So we were certainly competitive with them on a one-off occasion. But Derry came to Rathbone. They won 3-1 in front of a massive crowd, a huge home crowd, a huge away crowd. But that was the end. Not only was it the end of Limerick's title challenge, in many ways it was the end of the era for Limerick football as being, for many, many years, has been challenging at the top. Because Pat Grace actually ended up leaving the club. Billy Hamilton, who had been our player manager, left at the end of the season. We just missed out in Europe. Heartbreaking cup defeat by Drogheda. And it all kind of fell apart in a few weeks there. But Derry were the dominant side. They won, as I said, they won the treble. They won the League Cup. They won the FAI Cup to beat Cork City after a replay, and they won the league comfortably in the end.
It kind of cements them, though, in the league as an entity throughout the coming decades, though, doesn't it? Like, Derry kind of, for a good while, it becomes a difficult place to go and stuff like that. Some of the things that we kind of recognise them for now is what they became.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose they've always been competitive in reality since they've joined the League of Ireland, even in the First Division. Okay, it took them a couple of seasons to win it. But since they've been in the Premier Division, they've won leagues, they've won cups, they've always been competitive. As you say, the Brandywell is a really tough place to go. A fantastic venue, brilliant to go there as a away fan, very knowledgeable fans, but it's very hard to get a result there.
Yeah. Remember going up there for the Treaty United semi-final that was up there. Wonderful place. Lovely city, incredible people, and fans that just were so welcoming. They were so nice. There was no kind of, certainly from the fans that I met anyway, there was no kind of like, you know, animosity or, you know, we hope you lose, blah, blah, blah. It was always, even around the town, I remember going into a cafe, etc., getting breakfast one morning, and they were just so nice. They were like, you know, best of luck today, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, it's great to have them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been going up there since the 80s. And my dad actually was going up there. Limerick played up there in a famous Texaco Cup tie in 1970 at the height of the Troubles. And my dad was one of about 80 Limerick fans that made the trip up. And it was always, you're always made very welcome. They're very friendly there. And I mean, it's so far away. In the 80s and the 90s, it was often an overnight stay as well. And I will say, we lost the League Cup final up there in 91. They were so gracious in victory. And we beat them in the League Cup final in 2002 in the Brandywell. Well, beat them on penalties. Had actually lost on the night. And they were absolutely so gracious in defeat as well. And they were just so good. They came up to go out on the pitch and celebrate. They brought the away fans out onto the pitch to celebrate with the team. They were absolutely, I couldn't speak highly enough of the welcoming we always get in the Brandywell. In victory, which is quite rare, or in defeat, they have been incredible, and it's a fantastic place to visit. And they're just so knowledgeable. It's a real Derry. You talk about Sligo being a real football town. Yeah, Derry's the same. It's a real, real football town. They produce some fantastic players, and there's a huge history there, going back to the Irish League days. Going back to the many won Irish Cups, Irish Leagues, and since they've come into the League of Ireland, they've been a fantastic addition to the league. And I mean, they were my tip at the start of the season to win the league, and I thought I'd got that one badly wrong. They were only 3 points off the top as we talk, so I mightn't be badly wrong yet.
It took them a while to get going, but they're there, thereabouts. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Gary, next time I think we'll talk about the 90s and maybe have a chat about Dundalk again, because I don't think we gave them enough service perhaps on this episode than what they were. A fantastic team and continue to be a fantastic team for the rest of, for most of the 90s anyway. Gary, until next time. We started with Limerick, we finished with Limerick. Gary, thanks very much. Till the next episode.
Yeah, thanks, Gil.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and Amazon Music, as well as a host of other platforms too. Share the show on your social media platforms to help others learn more about the history and heritage of Irish football. And remember to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League club. It's our heritage, it's our game. Until then, bye for now.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.